Before we get started, I want to clear up a mistake I made last episode. At the end, I misspoke and said that Robin Dwayne Carter would be paroled September of 2020, when what I should have said was Carter can be paroled as early as 18 months from September 2020, which is when he enters an 18-month rehabilitation program. I apologize for the mistake and wanted to clear it up before we begin this episode, since it revolves mostly around Carter and his crimes. If for some reason you haven't listened to part 1 of the murder of Leisha Ann McGee, I highly recommend you doing so before listening to this part 2, though there will be a brief refresher to catch you back up to speed. Now on to the episode.
The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
In his 1978 book, Murder USA, The Ways We Kill Each Other, John Godwin not only describes a grim picture of how little value our society places on human life, but also the ways in which the justice system perpetuates something that closer resembles injustice. Godwin used a 1970 Fort Worth case as reference, in which a woman who was sentenced to 2 25-year terms for her role in the murder of 3 people, including a 4-year-old boy, was released after serving only 4 years. He argued that such loose and inconsistent sentences between states and even within states, where violent offenders and killers are let loose early, did nothing to serve justice. Violent offenders and murderers should not only be held accountable, Godwin said, but they should also serve the time given without parole. His argument makes sense in a lot of ways. The survivors and families of victims must live with the actions of the offenders forever, without relief. Godwin's primary point, though, is that practices like parole and plea deals only undermine justice and do little to further the cause. In the case of Robin Dwayne Carter, who has been granted and is scheduled for parole in early 2022, there is a near unanimous feeling in the community where he offended and the one where he is from to have the man serve his entire sentence, particularly when considering he might be responsible for the 4-decades-old slaying of Leisha McGee. On the early morning of January 23, 1978, 17-year-old Leisha Ann McGee was reported missing to the Fort Worth police. She'd been at the home of a couple friends the night before, but didn't return home after she left to do so at about 12:30 a.m. Leisha's family searched everywhere they could think of, and when they couldn't find her, they began to panic, fearing the worst. At around 5:30 that evening, those fears were realized when Leisha's car was found, the interior covered in blood. Leisha McGee was deceased in the trunk of the vehicle, her prized 1968 Chevrolet Impala. She'd been stabbed multiple times, her throat slashed, one paper reported, ear to ear. For 30 years, police made absolutely no progress in Leisha's case. It was as if her killer was a phantom, appearing to strike out of nowhere and dissipating into thin air after. Such a notion, of course, is absurd, and in early 2009, Fort Worth police utilized technological advancements in DNA testing to pull 2 profiles from a Marlboro cigarette butt found in the back seat door ashtray of Leisha's Impala. After securing samples from Leisha's sisters, one DNA profile was found to match the slain teenager. The other, a male DNA profile, was at first a mystery, but in June of that year, after running the profile through state databases, a match came up. The DNA belonged to a man named Robin Dwayne Carter, who was 48 years old in 2009, and serving year 13 of a 50-year sentence for an unthinkable and heinous crime. On Saturday, June 17, 1995, 30-year-old Melanie, a fifth-grade teacher at Lively Elementary in Irving, was speedwalking in her Colleyville neighborhood. Colleyville is a middle to upper-middle-class suburb just northeast of Fort Worth, and in 1995 was seeing major development, but there was still plenty of empty land and small wooded areas in the city at the time. Colleyville's crime rate back then, particularly the violent crime rate, was low, the suburb considered safe. As Melanie was walking, she passed a red pickup truck. It gave her an eerie feeling, not only because the truck was parked in an awkward manner, but also because she and the man sitting in the vehicle, who she described as, quote, creepy, made eye contact with one another for a moment. She looked away fast, Melanie would later say, but felt the strange man staring at her as she walked on. Melanie looked back, and she was right. The man was staring right at her. She described it as, quote, a very sick stare. He was up to something, Melanie thought. She just didn't know what. Because of the feeling she got from this stranger, she glanced at the truck's license plate and repeated the number over and over in her head as she continued down the street. A few minutes later, Melanie saw the red pickup truck drive past. She was crazy for thinking the man was up to something, Melanie said to herself. He was probably just picking someone up, or performing some other completely normal activity. The truck disappeared from her sight, and she went on. Moments later, Melanie heard a vehicle driving at a high speed behind her. She quickly stepped off the street, looked over her shoulder instinctively, and saw that the vehicle, the red pickup truck, was behind her and moving in fast. The truck sped onto the curb as she turned around, and before she had time to react, it slammed into her. The vehicle took her 20 feet from the site of impact before slamming on the brakes, sending Melanie flying. She hit the concrete street, and her head split open. Melanie's legs were already both broken from the impact of the pickup truck's bumper as it hit her. The stranger exited the vehicle and walked up to Melanie smiling. For a split second, she thought he was going to help her, that his smile was warm and one of concern for her. "Oh, does it hurt?" the man asked her, facetiously and cruelly. The man was later identified as Robin Dwayne Carter, and he wasn't done. Melanie tried to pull herself up, but even if Carter hadn't thwarted her by quickly grabbing her, it was a futile attempt. One of her arms, like her legs, was broken, her head split open, a vertebra crushed, and her liver lacerated. Melanie continued to struggle with Carter, though, screaming for help for what seemed to her like an eternity. Carter was finally able to drag her to his truck. He opened the door and tried to push her in, telling her, "You're my evidence. I ain't leaving you here." But she continued to struggle. Melanie, however, was beginning to fade from consciousness. She looked at the bone protruding from her arm, and she knew she had little fight left. She screamed one last time for help. Though the whole thing seemed to have lasted a long time to Melanie, in reality, only moments had gone by, and a neighbor who'd heard Carter drive his truck into the 30-year-old school teacher was making her way to the scene to investigate. Luckily, the neighbor was enough to scare Robin Carter, and he fled, leaving Melanie on the street. Melanie spent several months recovering from her injuries and underwent 5 surgeries. She was often confined to a wheelchair. The truck was traced to Robin Carter's brother after Melanie was able to give police the license plate number, and 2 days after the attack, 35-year-old Carter was arrested at a construction site in Colleyville where he was working. Months later, when Carter's trial was set to begin in April of 1996, he accepted a plea deal with the Tarrant County District Attorney. He told the judge at sentencing that it was drugs that made him do it, and drinking. He wasn't a bad person, Carter rambled to the court, begging Melanie, who was present, for forgiveness. When it was time for Melanie to speak, she told Carter she forgave him, but she'd do everything in her power to make sure he served his full sentence. Carter had proven, Melanie said, that he was incapable of living outside prison walls without hurting others. Melanie was right. When Carter ran her down, he'd only been out of prison for a few months, since February 13, 1995. He'd served 7 years of a 20-year sentence for a series of crimes in which he pleaded guilty to several counts of aggravated robbery. Carter took the plea that was offered to him by the Tarrant County DA because it dropped the attempted capital murder charge. On Saturday, March 21, 1987, police stations from Bembrook to Fort Worth were receiving multiple calls from different unconnected people about a man in a red shirt taking their vehicles at gunpoint. Luckily, police put two and two together and quickly figured out that they were looking for the same man for all the crimes. It was Robin Dwayne Carter, but they didn't know that yet. At about 4 p.m. that day, Carter burglarized two cars and one building on the 5300 block of West Vickery in Fort Worth, beginning his elaborate crime spree for the evening. About 300 feet away from the scene of the burglaries, Carter approached a child on his bicycle, pointed a pistol to the boy's head, and took his bike. He rode about four blocks away, approached a man getting in his vehicle, and stole the car at gunpoint. Carter made it just a couple miles away, as police soon discovered the stolen vehicle on the 4500 block of Greenbrook Place, abandoned. A few blocks from there, Carter stole another vehicle from a home on Spring Hill Road, drove the car a few miles away to the 6000 block of Camp Bowie, abandoned it, and made off with yet another car. But this time he was choosy, having inspected a different vehicle before taking his fourth stolen car. He abandoned that car within 10 miles in the Fort Worth neighborhood of Morningside, where he stole a fifth vehicle, driving it to a gas station at 1701 South Freeway, about a mile away, where he threatened the clerk there at gunpoint before stealing his sixth car there. From there, Carter drove to the 2100 block of Jennings Avenue, a couple blocks away, where he attempted to steal a man's pickup truck. This time, however, Carter bit off more than he could chew. The truck's owner, who was packing heat himself, caught Carter in the act of stealing his vehicle, and the man wasn't having it. As Carter sped off in the truck, the men exchanged gunfire. The owner of the pickup hopped in the car Carter had just abandoned and gave chase, but the man ran out of gas after only four blocks. Carter escaped from the stolen truck's owner, but he'd been shot twice. He only made it to Magnolia and Fifth, about a mile away, before he crashed the pickup truck, colliding with another vehicle. Carter fled on foot, but he was losing a lot of blood, and he left a trail of it, literally, that allowed police to track him to an apartment nearby. Carter was found hiding under a pile of clothes in the closet there. After committing 12 crimes, as he was being treated at John Peter Smith Hospital, he blamed the entire ordeal on drugs, which likely did play a role in that series of events. Obviously, even after serving 7 years of his sentence, Carter wasn't changed, as is evident by his horrific attack in 1995 on Melanie in Colleyville. But Robin Dwayne Carter's history with crime and violence began long before that, and there is more than just DNA on a Marlboro cigarette butt and a criminal and violent background that makes him a suspect in the murder of Leisha Ann McGee. On Tuesday, January 24th, 1978, the day after Leisha McGee was slain, Robin Dwayne Carter appeared before District Judge Scott Moore at juvenile court. Since he was a juvenile, Robin Carter's record of offenses as a teenager are, of course, sealed. However, many who grew up in the Greenbrier and surrounding neighborhoods know of his activities well, which consisted of breaking and entering, car theft, and vandalism largely, starting as early as when Carter was 13, if not before. The case that he was in court for that day, however, is known. Carter had abducted a woman on Saturday, December 3, 1977. At a Fort Worth service station on Crowley Road, just off Interstate 20, a 24-year-old student from Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary stopped to fill up her tank. The woman's Chevrolet Nova was overheating too, and noticing the steam coming off the vehicle's engine was a 16-year-old Robin Carter. Carter offered to help the woman, and as he filled the car's radiator with water, he made small talk. He asked the woman where she was headed, and when she told him, he said he needed a ride to somewhere near there. She agreed to give Carter a ride. He'd helped her after all, but the good deed quickly turned into a nightmare. After they'd traveled only a short distance, the teenager wrapped a rag around the woman's neck. Carter told her to keep driving. The woman realized that she was in a life-or-death situation. If she didn't find an area where there was a lot of people soon, she knew it could mean her life. Bravely defying Carter's attempts to control her, the woman slipped one hand between the rag and her throat, preventing him from choking her, and veered suddenly into a Dairy Queen parking lot, purposely smashing into a brick column. She honked the horn frantically, while opening the car door, attempting to flee. The woman was halfway out of the car when Carter floored it, and upon him taking off, she flew from the vehicle. A Tarrant County District Attorney investigator, who heard the commotion from his home nearby, was able to act quickly enough to give Carter chase. He radioed the Fort Worth police as he pursued the teenager, and they were able to take over pursuit in no time. Once the cops were after him, Carter presumably panicked, crashing the Chevy Nova on the grounds of the very seminary in which the woman he abducted was a student. A chase on foot ensued, but was short-lived, and officers detained 16-year-old Robin Carter. Carter was held at the Tarrant County Juvenile Center for a couple weeks until he was finally released on Friday, December 16th, to the custody of his parents. Carter's appearance in court on January 24, 1978, was a rescheduled date due to the weather and was supposed to have taken place the previous Friday, the 21st. He was given probation, even though he was no stranger to the system, a repeat offender who was constantly slapped on the wrist, even as his offenses escalated. When a Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary security guard heard of Leisha Ann McGee's slaying weeks after it happened, he telephoned Fort Worth homicide detectives. He told homicide investigators about Robin Carter's bungled kidnapping and police chase the month prior to Leisha's killing, remembering clearly how it ended when Carter crashed on the seminary's campus. Detectives were certainly intrigued. The abduction of the student and Leisha's murder had similarities, it seemed. In March of 1978, following, perhaps, their only lead, detectives visited the home where Robin Carter lived with his parents and brothers on Cameron Street, just two blocks from where Leisha lived on Hodgson. Detectives wished to speak with Robin, but he wasn't home. They told Betty and George, Robin's parents, that they wanted to bring the 16-year-old in for questioning and to take a polygraph test, since the case he'd been caught red-handed for shared aspects of Leisha's murder, detectives told the Carters. Contradicting the fact that both he and his wife were home, and Robin was not, George Carter told the homicide detectives that Robin wasn't allowed to leave the home without one of them going along with him since the incident in December. Police, for whatever reason, seemed to have not picked up on that. Robin's father went on to tell the detectives that on the night of Leisha's murder, the family ate dinner at a relative's house. And when they returned home, George said, he and Robin played cards until shortly after midnight, at which time they both went to bed. As detectives spoke with the Carter parents, Robin arrived home, and they got the opportunity to ask him if he'd be willing to take a polygraph test. At first, Robin agreed, telling them he had nothing to hide, but subsequently went back on that agreement. Detectives told the teenager to talk to his parents and reconsider his decision and that they'd check back to see if he'd changed his mind. Fort Worth police never followed up on the Robin Carter lead in the initial investigation, or after, for that matter, until his DNA profile matched the cigarette butt found in the backseat of Leisha's car in 2009. It wasn't just that Carter's DNA was on the Marlboro cigarette butt. It's also that the Chevy Impala had been detailed that day, meaning the ashtrays had been cleaned, along with the fact that Robin Carter insisted to detectives, both in the initial investigation and the 2009 investigation, that he didn't socialize with Leisha at all and that he'd never been in her car. He was, however, willing to plead guilty to Leisha's slang through a deal, telling Fort Worth homicide investigators that he'd accept a 30-year sentence for killing the 17-year-old if the time ran concurrently with the time he was already serving. It certainly wasn't a confession. Rather, Carter seemed to have been making the offer just to get detectives off his back. The Tarrant County District Attorney wouldn't bite. He told detectives that all they had was the DNA on the cigarette butt, and that it wasn't enough to try and convict him anyway, let alone offer him a plea deal. There were far too many other explanations for how the Marlboro butt with the Carter's DNA could have gotten there, the DA said. Since the clothing Leisha was wearing when she was brutally stabbed and her throat slashed had been accidentally destroyed in 1988 by careless Fort Worth Police Department officers, testing on those items is not an option. And testing on two rings Leisha wore that night, as well as bloodied material removed and stored from the car seats, provided no further DNA evidence. Fort Worth homicide detectives working Leisha's long cold case in 2009 vehemently disagreed with the Tarrant County District Attorney, suggesting that a jury of 12 would easily find Robin Dwayne Carter guilty of Leisha's murder. Detective Manny Reyes, who interviewed Carter extensively, was particularly vocal about his guilt in the case. He was worried that when Carter's parole hearing came up in June 2020, he would be let out. And of course, now we know he was right. Should Robin Carter successfully complete 18 months of a sex offender rehabilitation program that is set to begin on September of this year, 2020, he'll be released on parole. That puts Robin Dwayne Carter back on the streets around March 2022. Leisha's family, and likely the woman who he ran over while she walked, Melanie, feel that the decision is a terrible one, an opinion that is difficult to disagree with. It seems likely the man will violently offend again. It also seems relevant to note that Carter must complete an 18-month sex offender rehabilitation program, but he's never been convicted of sexual assault. All Robin Carter's brothers were in constant trouble with the law and drugs. His brother Pat was the victim of a hit-and-run auto accident, which left him severely brain damaged and unable to live without constant medical care, which presented a predicament to detectives when George Carter, Robin's father, gave them some shocking news in 2010. He told them that his son Pat once spoke of seeing Robin with a bloody butcher knife around the time of Leisha's slaying. A knife also disappeared from the kitchen of the Carter family home around that time as well. Detective Manny Reyes, Leisha's sister Lori, told us, did not believe George Carter's account of his son's whereabouts that he told detectives back in 1978, even though George Carter spent 30 years in law enforcement as a reserve police officer beginning in 1982. Reyes is now retired, but he believed, according to Lori, that on the night of Leisha's death, she encountered Robin Carter at a convenience store at James Avenue and West Butler Street, where Leisha was buying cigarettes. The theory, presumably, is that Carter wanted a ride and for whatever reason, perhaps no reason, the ride took a violent turn, leading Carter to kill Leisha. If he did murder Leisha McGee, Robin Dwayne Carter will likely never confess. A week after Leisha's murder, on Monday, January 30th, 1978, a fellow student of hers was found barely alive in his car in the garage of a far south Fort Worth residential construction site. The teenager, Mark Allen Johnson, was taken to the hospital, but died later that day. Police commented that Leisha and Mark were acquainted, and though it appeared he had committed suicide, medical examiner Felix Gwotz said it could have been staged to look that way. Gwotz determined the cause of death, a massive brain hemorrhage, could have been caused by carbon monoxide poisoning, but could also have been caused by a blow to the head. Perhaps, Gwotz commented, Mark Allen Johnson was knocked unconscious and placed in the vehicle to die of the gas poisoning. Even the well-respected Tarrant County medical examiner was having a hard time not connecting invisible dots. Fort Worth homicide detectives even theorized that Leisha's murder was connected to the so-called February slayings, which included the 1967 murder of Mildred May, the 1973 abduction and murder of Becky Martin, the 1974 abduction and murder of Carla Walker, and the 1977 murder of June Ward. June's was the only attack in which the sheer brutality matched Leisha's, and none of these theories, anyway, were as solid as Robin Carter is a suspect now, and even was at the time of the initial investigation. Helen McGee, Leisha's mother, too, must have wondered about any possibility that could be thought of. She did wonder, like many would even 30 years later, if her daughter's slaying was connected to the 1974 disappearances of Renee Wilson, Julie Mosley, and Rachel Trelisa. Helen said that Leisha got her hair done at the same beauty parlor where Renee, Julie, and Rachel, collectively known as the Fort Worth Missing Trio, got their hair cut. A man was once seen, Helen told the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, trying to enter the beauty parlor after it was closed, spooking the employees within. It made her wonder, like everything else. Whoever killed Leisha must have been covered with blood, Helen told a reporter. He couldn't have just walked away from the car and thumbed a ride back to town. The walk to Cameron Street, where Robin Carter lived with his family, however, was only a little over a mile walk from where Leisha's body was found. If you have any information about the murder of Leisha Ann McGee, please contact the Fort Worth Police at 817-392-4307. Special thanks to Lori for speaking with us about her sister's case. You can keep up with Leisha's case on the Facebook page dedicated to her, called Justice for Leisha. You can support Gone Cold Podcast at patreon.com/GoneColdPodcast. Donors at all levels get the show ad-free, and for just $2.50 a month, you'll have access to episodes featuring stories of mostly solved Texas crimes and the bad actors who perpetrated them. Patreon exclusives include, among others, The Monday Afternoon Murderer and the latest, Dr. Dreadful, about a Dallas doctor who was a rapist by night and eventually a murderer. Thanks to everyone who supports us there. We appreciate y'all's support beyond words. The Fort Worth Star-Telegram, the Longview Journal, and documents were used as sources for this episode. Thanks for listening, y'all.